dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody out in SVC land, and welcome in once again to show 282 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox, and I will introduce the other two gentlemen here momentarily after I tell you that this and all 281 other episodes have been brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inns. Normally open 7 days a week from 11 to 10. And you can give them a call, 740-773-7529. Look them up on the web at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And with the best of our knowledge, they are still temporarily closed as we record this episode on May the 14th. But if you have any questions, I encourage you to give them a call or check their website for more information, as things are changing daily anyway. And like to bring in our two other gentlemen who are going to do most of the speaking here today on the podcast. First, let's say hello to John Bruce. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Bruce. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Things good for you over there in Chillicothe land?
Well, I finally caved and cut my own hair the other day.
Well, that's exciting. So, I got that.
Yeah. Well, I used to do it.
Yeah.
When I would keep it really short, I would do it. And then I hadn't had a haircut in over 2 months. And my neck and my ears were just bothering me. So I did it down there. And now I look at it and it's entirely too long on top. But I'm not touching that.
I got you.
I have
one of those helmet head, that's what I call it, helmet head haircuts. Mm-hmm. My wife took the shears to me, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and I'm wearing a hat here as I talk to you from the home, from the confines of my home office, because mm-hmm. I don't think it looks real good, but don't tell her that right now. So, well, welcome in. And then Shane, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Lonely here in the studio without you guys, but I'm glad we still get together like this and do it. And for the record, I guess I've cut my own hair since the late 90s, so I'm right. Okay there. But no, other than that, doing great.
Oh, great. I'm glad that you take care of your own hair. That doesn't surprise me a little bit. That's so there's more money to go spend on the food at football games and basketball games and so on and so forth. So
yeah,
and more Mountain Dew. That's what that goes for.
Diet Mountain Dew.
Diet Mountain Dew. Excuse me, I got that one wrong.
I'm watching my pig.
Yeah, you're getting it out there where you can all watch it, right? I plead guilty to that as well. So what's on the agenda for show 282, Shane?
Well, the same great support, first of all. You know, the Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, Crown Hill Golf Club, those three. I know Bruce will mention some details throughout, but can't say enough for what they do. You also mentioned Triple Crown there in the beginning. Right before all this went down, we'd been talking about getting a live show sometime this spring, and there obviously this makes it a little bit more difficult to do that, but look forward to an opportunity down the road to maybe still get to take them up on that. But they've been incredible support to us, so that we can support the league in the way we've been able to do now for 282 shows. So thank you. But as Bruce kind of takes us through the agenda in different segments, you'll hear Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, Crown Hill Golf Club. We're going to be talking about John's bracket and the different things he's put out, doing a great job there on SOSA. It's taking a look at the SBC boys' greatest basketball team of all time. And, you know, John, I guess here in the opening, I guess what I would ask you is, I've had about five different things of feedback, so I'll just kind of rapid fire you, because you'll probably get a chance throughout to kind of explain different scenarios anyway. But, you know, okay. I've heard naming brackets, selecting teams, seeding, voting, et cetera. I'll just come one at a time at you. The naming the brackets is something really, really cool. Obviously, I'm sure there was 20, 25 names out there throughout time. You'll get a chance to talk about the individuals later, mm-hmm. but maybe just talk to us about how you arrived at those four special names.
Well, for me, I wanted to do something to where it would honor some people that maybe their playing days weren't going to be honored in the tournament. Mm. So for like Larry Jordan, we all know him as this great – as the greatest coach ever in the SEC. You know, he won SEC Coach of the Year 15 times. And he didn't always – yeah, he didn't always win it on years he won the league, because he won the league 17 times. And the crazier thing, Southeastern wasn't in the SEC the first 12 years of basketball. So he probably could have won it more. You know, in his playing days, Southeastern was not in the SEC. They're in the Ross County League. And I wanted to make sure to honor him. So when I thought of it that way, I was like, man, do I want to go coaches or do I want to go with some players? And then when I looked into more, obviously I wanted to name one after Dale Haynes. You know how much he meant to me and you and many others in the community. So I thought, man, well, Jeff Reisinger didn't play in the SEC. 1,673 points, just got passed by Cam Evans in Zane Trace's last game. You know, led Zane Trace to a couple of 26 in one seasons. Went and ended up playing at Clemson, you know. His senior year was the last year Zane Trace wasn't in the SBC. So I wanted to make sure to give him a shout out in some way, because his team, his last 2 years, they're probably going to be in at least the Final Four, if not the winners of it, if I went back to pre-SBC time. And then Ron Shoemaker, you know, he didn't technically even go to a school that's in the SBC, because he went to Twin, which is in Bourneville, which is converged into Paint Valley. But Ron was the all-time leading scorer until your brother came through in the SVC. And then he was also passed by Dylan Swingle recently, and only passed by Humpty Hitchens as the only other person in Ross County history. So he's fourth all-time in Ross County history in scoring before the three-point line. You know, was an unreal coach at Bishop Leger. He only did it for 3 years, and then he became an administrator. And – you know, he's somebody you'll still see at games. And I kind of wanted to give a shout out there too, because he was one of those names that you've always heard was how spectacular of a player he was.
Well, that's good stuff. I know Dell was a great player too. He and Don Neff are kind of just a couple thousand point scores early on there, like you said, in the early going. So that makes a lot of sense. That's well said. Now, as far as selecting the teams and then trying to seed them, that had to be nutty. You know what I mean? When I start mm-hmm. to look anywhere from a 3 seed through, like, say, a 14 or 15 seed, I mean, gosh, you start to really just split hairs. I mean, it becomes mm-hmm. really just a number. Talk to us about, was there any locks on terms of, like, a certain type of team had to be on? Was it a league champion? Was it a district champion? And then, you know, other than maybe the one or two seeds, which I assume were a little bit easier, how in the world did you start to decide from about three down through that 12, 13, 14 line?
Well, I wanted to make sure every team that had won a district championship was on there. So you have the Southeastern team from 16-17 that had the losing record. I wanted to make sure that they got the attention they deserved, because, you know, they didn't have the great regular season, but they had the great postseason run. And then I wanted to – there's a couple years that the league champions aren't on there. But for the most part, I wanted to include the league champions, especially if they had a really strong year. Like, there's a 71-72 Uniota team went 6-0 in the league, so they went undefeated. But they were 13-6 overall, so that's why they're one of the lower seeds. But I wanted to make sure, since they went undefeated in the league, that they were included. So I tried to look at – so when I incorporated district champions and league champions, I also wanted to try to include teams that, you know, maybe they had a great regular season and came up a little short in the tournament. I wanted to include those –
If you got to a district final game, there's a good chance that you got into it. There's a few teams that lost in the first round of the tournament that were included. And so when I did the seeding, like you said, it was a lot of splitting hair stuff. I went with, you know, if you won a gold ball, you were going to be a higher seed. Like there was, especially when it went to a double round. So sure. Yep. once the league went to 12 to 16 games, that's when I really hit hard on the those undefeated teams would be a higher seed. And then it just kind of went from there and went to looked at some overall record, tried to look at overall league strength. Part of the issue was, you know, how good, like the 91-92 league was so good, but I only had one team in. It was hard because of how balanced the league was. So that's where I had to look at, okay, I want to try to get as many many years mentioned as possible to get enough, you know, full on breakdown of the years where, you know, some years the league was really strong and only got one team in. Some years the league was really strong and got two teams in. So I wanted to, you know, try to spread the wealth a little bit out on that. You could kind of, in a way, look at the way the NCAA tournament used to do it, where, you know, like the one team got in from each league. So part of me had that. And, you know, and I didn't want to leave too many recent teams out, but I also didn't want to put so many in the where recency bias would automatically have those teams move on, if that makes sense.
Well, I think it makes total sense, you know, and even things that, you know, agree, disagree, whatever. I just think it's well explained. Again, these are hard to do. You'll hear me say all the time when I've done my list over the years, if you don't like my list, do your own. Right. You know, saying it's hard. Yeah. You know what I mean? So real quick then, before I kind of give some 2 cents and we start down through here, explain to us how we can vote. I know I've been voting what we're in the round of 32, and yes. Maybe explain to the fans how they can go about voting.
Well, if you follow my Twitter account, which is at Coconut Wall Papa, which we always mention on here anyway, I'll always either have the first post of it, or I'll retweet whatever SOSA puts out, Southern Ohio Sports Authority, which is at Ohio Authority on Twitter. Also on Facebook, we're putting the posts out on there. Or if you get on the Southern Ohio Sports Authority website, which is SOHIOSA.com, we've had posts articles every 2 days. So for the next – so when this comes out tonight, so on Thursday, there'll be another article. I believe it's the Dale Haynes Regional will come out with a round of 32. And then on Saturday, the Ron Shoemaker Regional will come out with their round of 32. And then on Monday will be the last of the round of 32, which will be the Jeff Reisinger Regional. Following that, we are going to kind of – put it all together. Well, it's still going to be separated, but it's going to be in one article to where it's not going to be every 2 days on every single regional. So we're going to kind of shorten it down, and it'll go another week after that. So it'll be, I believe next Wednesday will be the Sweet 16. It may be pushed back to Thursday, but the Sweet 16 will all be out in one article, and you can vote on there. On each article, there is a poll at the bottom where you can vote, and there's a bio on each team before it. So I'll pull up like the Larry Jordan Regional right now. I'll just kind of read through the bio real quick. If you look at the 89-90 Southeastern team, they're the number one seed. You know, I have a bio on them. I list players. I list their regular season record, who they beat in the sectional, big plays from the sectional. Like for them, Carl Lawhorn came off the bench for them, you know, had a rebound of a missed three in the regional final, and then kicked it out to Aaron Skeens to hit a three to send it to overtime, mm-hmm. which they won. So I wanted to make sure to put those in. And then, like, they beat Columbus Worley during the regular season, who won the state championship that year in Division IV, which was their third straight state championship.
Right.
And so I wanted to make sure to put as much information in as possible for these teams. And then after that, you can
you can vote between the two teams. So they were facing off against the 85, 86 Spectrum Red Streaks, 22-3, Scott Legg, 20 points, 6 assists. Rod Nichols, you would know, as one of the best officials in the area, you know, was their second best player, one of their best players. Tim Hill for them had a putback basket in closing seconds to win their first sectional title since 1958. So I tried to put as much stuff in as possible on these teams. But what I'm also going to do is once we get to the Sweet 16, I'm going to have even more information on these teams for who they played and whatnot, because I can't let myself just not give these teams the best chance. And I can't also not work like 5 hours a night.
Well, Bruce, I think that gives fans an idea of just how much went into this. I, knowing John the way I do and doing stuff like this myself over the years on the website, I know how incredibly difficult it is. I have a ton of opinions, obviously something I'm very passionate, but honestly, I think mine will probably work into the conversation on the bracket. So what do you think?
Can I say one more thing? Yeah. Also, this is for fun. Like, there's no fictional trophy. Well, I guess there's a fictional trophy, but there's not going to be a trophy sent out to the schools who get it. So, you know, it's for fun. I know people have gotten worked up over it, which is part of the fun, because, you know, we want discussion going. I've heard people, like my brother Chris has talked to the Wards, Chad and Charlie, about this. They talk about it every time that these brackets get put out. They have a group text and talk about it. I know the Piketon coaching staff has talked about it. you know, and it's – so that's the fun of it. That's where it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be for fans. It's supposed to be – you know, maybe it's something where, you know, one of these players can say, hey, look, I told you I was good. I was on this team. Like, they could show their kids or grandkids, you know. And like I mentioned, it's for fun.
No, but I understand people's passion, because I've had the feedback when I name current teams, or if I name all-time teams, or I just did that GM thing a while back, and you know, Shue did his 91-92 article, and there's just been a lot of talk during this time about boys basketball. I thought it was very relevant, and that's why I thought it was worth just kind of throwing a show out there, because I think it celebrates a lot of our league. I think it's important for our modern day kids too, to just kind of understand the history of the league and the history of their school and the history of their programs. It's something that I think it's something that we are really lacking right now in terms of school pride and just understanding, you know, some of the traditions and so forth. So Bruce, on that, you want me to just go straight into a bracket here? Well, I think we have four brackets kind of divided into four segments of the show and just kind of go with it, or
that would be wonderful. Let's start with a bracket. We've got three bumps coming up this afternoon, so we'll just go ahead and start with our first bracket, the Larry Jordan bracket.
Okay. Well, John, I'll tell you what. Talk to us quickly. Like I said, I know you mentioned how you came about doing those. Talk to us briefly there about Coach Jordan and Larry Jordan, the special player. And then I'll kind of throw some different questions at you, and Bruce will give you a chance to throw them back at me. And we'll just kind of, you know, go back and forth and talk a lot of basketball here.
Yeah, well, Coach Jordan was, you know, if not the greatest coach of the SEC – one of the greatest. I would say I would put him up against anybody. Had a 605 wins, which is the most in Ross County history. You know, it's 605 and 371. So almost 1,000 varsity basketball games Coach Jordan coached between Southeastern, Waverly, Jackson, and Western. You know, it was at Southeastern where he made his biggest impact. Led the Panthers 17 SBC titles out of their 17. He's won every one, or no, out of 19, because Coach Easterday won two. 18 sectional championships, 10 district titles, and then three regional championships. At Southeastern alone, he was 539 and 242, winning 70% of the time. And that's with his last year, they really struggled. But the year before that, they won the league, which was, I think you can remember back then, Shane, it was kind of out of nowhere, and they won it kind of easy. But in high school and college, he was also a standout player. At Southeastern, he scored 1,298 points. You know, he was a he was a superstar. I talked to my dad about him, and he said that there was a game where, and I mean, he was what, 6'4", 6'5", just a huge guy, especially back in the early 60s. Sure. But my dad said in the tournament they were struggling, so they just had him bring the ball up and run the offense. So he was like an early point forward. He was second team All-Ohio in Class A, which is when they only had two divisions. So the top 10 players or top five players in the state got first team. And really, honestly, his he should have been first team All-Ohio. I mean, he was just 27.4 points a game, 23 rebounds a game his senior year. He was the first member of the exclusive 1,000-point, 1,000-rebound club, which I believe there's only four in the county, which I think is Dylan Swingle, Jeff Reisinger, and Garen Varis from Chillicothe would have been the other one. So, you know, his overall numbers haven't even been found, but his senior year he had 598 rebounds. So after high school, he went down south to the state of Kentucky. He starred at Morehead State. He was a senior captain his senior year, obviously. Averaged 15.8 points and 7.4 rebounds a game as a senior at Morehead State. In 2008, he won the Paul Walker Award from the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association, which is, you know, it's given once a year, obviously, but it's for great coaches and great leaders of men. And also he was he's a member of the OHS BCA Hall of Fame. Just one of the just great coaches of the SVC. And, you know, he always had some good size, which was crazy if you look at some of the sizes of the teams he had. But he also did a really good job of, like, he had a player, Rick Schrader, was SVC Player of the Year in 1978. Who came off the bench in 1977 as his point guard because he had a four-year starter ahead of him, and he could work with guys and make them make great leaps between their junior and senior year, sophomore and junior year. Just an extremely worthy person to have a racket named after him.
No question. Well, let's talk about the bracket here. Speaking of Coach Jordan there at the top. The 89-90 Southeastern teams are top seed, and you know, this is a team that's kind of special to me because it's really the first year that I was old enough to really know. See, that's the other thing that's tricky about this bracket, and it's something I've always steered clear. So I give you credit for taking this on, John, because I'll talk a little bit about – there's some 86, 87, 88, 89 teams that I'll talk briefly about here and there because I've seen them play. But the Southeastern team was one of the first real elite teams that watching them in person, I was old enough and smart enough to know what I was watching and, you know, with the size of a Skeens and Adams and not to mention the Jordans and Minton and so forth. They were a team that could just really, really play. You mentioned – Lawhorn and so forth. So certainly a worthy top seed. I've talked to Coach Lovely a lot about, you know, the Flaget team that was on the perfect run. And then I kind of looked down through the bracket. I like the depth of this bracket, but certainly the class of this bracket has to be those top couple seeds. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, those top seeds and you know, just anything else you think's worth. There in that bracket, in this bracket the top two seeds really jumped out at me with a little bit of depth as you move down through the bracket.
Yeah, well, I actually the Bishop Leger team, this is probably where I kind of just put the seeds together. I was trying not to kind of overlap. Like, I didn't want the one seed to be Southeastern and the two seed to be Southeastern. So I wanted to have a possibility of the one and two seed to meet, and it would be two different schools, was what I was trying to do with these brackets. And that's where this one kind of hit together, because that Bishop Leger team from 82-83 lost in triple overtime in the district final when their top two players who shared SEC Player of the Year, Pat Austin and Tony Taylor, are both in foul trouble. You know, no excuses, obviously, but finishing 23-1. They were the first team to go 16-0 in the SEC from the time they expanded to nine teams, which obviously went down to eight when Flagey closed after the 85-86 school year. But, you know, they were unreal with, you know, Paul and Nick Corcoran. Nick Corcoran was a junior, would go on to win SEC Player of the Year the next year. Steve Hirsch, Jimmy White, who's the JV girls coach at Uniota, who's probably has the greatest winning percentage of any coach in SEC history, and he does a heck of a job, was one of their key players. You know, they had some really good depth. They had eight seniors, which really kind of points out how good Nick Corcoran was, to where he could break into the lineup as one of the players. John Stark was a senior for them, gave them good minutes. You know, so I thought they could have been a one seed. You know, so they were right on the kind of 4-5 range of if they were going to be a one seed or not. That Southeastern team, if you looked at Aaron Skeens and Mike Adams' stats, it's hilarious. Like, Mike Adams in the state semifinal game scored three more points than Aaron Skeens in the game and finished with two more career points. When they were sophomores, they averaged the same amount of points per game. Like, they had the same – they did the same thing every year. Like, they were just unreal. They finished 19-1 in the regular season. They lost to a St. Henry team that won two straight state championships. One was D3 that year, and the next year they won D4. There's a name folks of the podcast might know, with Bobby Hoyne. Wasn't their best player. Anytime – like, you see Joe Burrow – you know, as a going to be an NBA or NFL player, you know, at Athens, he was their best player in basketball too. Well, Bobby Hoyne wasn't the best player and possibly wasn't the best athlete on his team at St. Henry. That's how good that team was. So, you know, there's nothing to sneeze at for them losing to them. Now, I wanted to, you know, a team that lost in the first round actually was the 17-18 Uniota team. Went 14-0 in the league. That was Logan Swackhammer, Brandon Kennedy, Gabe Fisher, and Peyton Hill's senior year. You know, that shows the kind of how the voting can go, where, you know, maybe one team gets a little bit more support, and that's where also we're going to look at a kind of an experts bracket when this whole thing is all said and done, where we're going to compare kind of the consensus quote-unquote expert pick versus the fan pick to see how big of a difference there is and whatnot. So that's where, like, a team like them, a team I'll talk about later with a best Paint Valley team, in my opinion, the 92-93 team, got beat in the first round. You know, so we'll talk about them later on. You know, there was, like, where you mentioned kind of splitting hairs on the voting. I had the 03-04 Piketon team as a 13 seed. That was one where it was like, okay, oh, okay, well, this team was unreal. Did 3 1,000-point scores. Kyle Volgamore was a senior. Kyle Miller and Eric Farmer were juniors. Volgamore came over from Eastern before his junior year and got hurt late in the season, and they kind of, you know, stumbled a little bit towards the end. But the 3 years before, including the year before, when they went, I believe it was 9-12, they went 15-53, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then 15-48 the previous 3 years. They go 19-4. You know, you have all these just unreal players, and they were the 13th seed. And it looks like they're going to get to, I believe they're going to get to the Sweet 16 to match up with Southeastern. And I'm not even sure if either of those are going to be upsets. They're playing a 2001 Zane Trace team that had the first gold ball within, I believe it was 12 years at that point.
Right.
Yeah. And just, you know, the depth of this bracket is unreal. You have Brian Alley, who, for kids who don't know, if they just remember him as, you know, the coach for Zane Trace, he might have been one of the best athletes we've ever had in the SBC, because just his sprinting speed and everything was just unreal. And then take him over to basketball, he was two-time player of the year in the SBC. Right. You know, it looks like they're going to move on to the Sweet 16 too, and they'll match up with that Bishop Leger team. I'm hopeful it'll be Southeastern against Bishop Leger in the final in that, because I felt like that was kind of the lock of what it would be, but it comes down to just how the voting goes.
Yeah.
John, is there anything in the bracket that kind of jumps out at you that you'd like Shane to think about and respond to before we move on?
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned the upsets. So like that Huntington 88-89 team with Chad Carroll, people know him as a really good baseball coach, great baseball player, was one of their top players. Marty Kello, you know, is there anything, you know, that fans should look at when it comes to the possible upsets in these tournaments? Is there anything that you think of upset wise, you know, with that Piketon team also beating a really good 74-75 Southeastern team? Is that where it's just kind of the splitting hairs?
Well, I think what happens is this stuff comes from the number in front of the name.
Yeah.
You know, the seed. It, you know, whenever we see, we do this, we're guilty of the same thing in the NCAA, but after a while you think we would learn that, you know, a 14 beats a 3 all the time. A 13 beats a 4 all the time. Why? Because we don't really know much about Belmont. We don't really know much about this particular team. We don't really know much. And so what happens is about three different things. Number one, you know, the time period is really, really important to understand here. And this is why I steer clear sometimes of going back and talking much about the people in the 70s and 80s, because even though I research, maybe I don't know. Like,
right.
Like that late 80s Huntington team, man, they were good. They were good. They were physical. They played a physical brand. They were tough. They had shot makers. They had ball handlers. So, you know, that's a really, really good basketball team that played, quite frankly, and again, I'm not taking anything away from the Uniota team, they played in a much, much deeper, tougher time of SBC basketball, in my opinion. Now, the Piketon team you're referring to, that's an interesting thing, and I hope I don't upset Piketon people here. I'm just trying to give basketball analysis. I coached during these times.
Yeah.
The other thing we're guilty of, John, is this. We think of these players, and we think of – so like when we see the name Kyle Miller,
yeah,
a lot of people are guilty of saying Kyle Miller, thinking of him in college, thinking of him going a little overseas basketball, or maybe just thinking of him right now still young enough to lace him up and be the best player in most gyms he walks into.
Hey, so, real quick, I saw a video of him dunking the other day.
Yeah, so my point is – We still have to go back and evaluate a high school version of these teams and these players. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like, you're referring to those Piketon teams going, you know, with the bad record there, whatever. Their freshman year, Coach Carino didn't have a whole lot there. He threw a bunch of freshmen into the fire, which a lot of people you thought was a great move. It ended up paying off later.
Right.
You know, they didn't win a game. Their sophomore year, if I'm being fair, and again, I'm just being fair, I don't know if they would have won a game again. You know what I'm saying? And they were able to get, you know, some help, some move in some different things, and then slowly but surely start to build up and go. That was an excellent team later on down the road. But I think we're guilty of watching what some of these players become or different things. So, again, when you see a 4-13, a 3-14, I think you have to understand that, in my opinion, when I look through these brackets, I thought the seeding was pretty obvious in terms of about the top one or two seeds in most bracket. From about the 3, definitely the 4 line, all the way down to about the 13 or 14, I thought John had a completely impossible job, and I thought did a good job, you know, trying to do what he thought. But what I would encourage people to do is, especially if you're old enough to do it, is not pay so much attention to the seed, but really try to look at the team. I'm the first to admit where I'm doing a poor job of voting in this bracket is, again, teams that start to fall back from about 86 and on back, because at that point, I'm reading about them and I don't know. I don't have the eye. I'm lucky enough from you know, watching some teams in the 90s, playing throughout the 90s, coaching throughout the 2000s, and then having the website the last 13 years, I can give a far better thing. But I think what happens is, again, seeding plays a role. Did you watch it with your eyes, or are you just going off of the hearsay or off of the research? And then probably the biggest thing is, too, is if you've seen some of these players go on to do things their junior, senior year into the college years, because, John, we talked about this when we were on a show here about a month ago. A lot of times you forget which teams are which. You just remember, all Uniota was good for that 3-4 year stretch, mm-hmm. or Piketon was really good for that 5-6 year stretch, or Uniota in the early 90s won 7 straight sectional titles. You know, whatever it might be, Southeastern, as you said, just won a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So trying to break down in a 6-year period where teams overlap, you're trying to stop and really remember, okay, on that Zane Trace Gold Ball team, okay, this kid was this age, this kid was this age, this kid was this age, and you're really trying to picture that team going and playing. So I can't blame the fans in this bracket, pretty much 3 through, gosh, 14, because that 14 seed bracket's really good. That Huntington team, they're really good. I can't really blame them on however they decide to vote, but I feel like those top 2 seeds in this bracket are pretty spot on.
Yeah, I was looking at it, like, in the way I voted, I haven't necessarily voted by the seeds, because I look through and, like, there's a couple of them I'm like, oh man, I messed this one up, or this is a really tough matchup, because, you know, maybe it would have been better to just do the top 2 seeds and then just put names on the bracket. A lot of the older fans have been really good about looking at these teams and, like, what they might know about the team. So like the 74-75 Southeastern team, I'll use it as an example. They were one of 2 teams that went to the regional that year from the SBC, which would have been Southeastern and Edina. So, I mean, we don't have a lot of those years where we've had multiple teams. That, to me, shows the depth of that league. And, you know, that might have been a recency bias thing on why they lost. You know, it's – to me, I tried to put it together, put as much information out there for people who hadn't seen it. And that was the kind of recency bias thing, was the kind of thing that worried me most about this, because not everyone has seen all these teams, me included, obviously.
Well, Bruce, I'll have to say, John's got a little NCAA in him here. Yes. He may have a nice future for them, because I always laugh when NCAA brackets come out and you look for those storylines, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like the player Bryant Alley and then the coach Bryant Alley. I think
that was well done.
but there's a great example. One team, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it pulled up. One team wins a district title, the other one doesn't. I think that was what, 6-11 matchup?
Yep.
But again, that's what I'm talking about. That might be a 6-11 matchup, to where a lot of people, when they look at upsets, they're like, oh man, that's 5 seeds separating. Basically the same team.
Yeah.
Really good players, really good athlete, really, you know, so again, don't get wrapped up with seeds. Really try to study the teams and look at them. But also, you know, the accomplishment versus eye test could be a lot of things here too. John obviously had a formula he was trying to go off of in terms of teams that won a district crown and so forth. So I get it. I really a difficult thing. But again, as he said, try to have some fun with it and go. But that's a good bracket. And I look forward here to the next 3 as well.
All right, guys. Up next, we're going to visit the bracket of a great Uniota team. So it makes sense. The bracket would take the name of a legendary tank. Yeah. And as we discuss the second bracket here, it's going to be brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. You can call them at 877-947-4499. They're celebrating over 20 years of serving Southern Ohio, and they remain open through all this to service your HVAC needs. You can look them up on the web as well at advancedservicesHVAC.com. So we're going to move into the second of the four brackets we're going to speak of this today in this podcast. John, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about the namesake of this bracket.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, Dale Haynes meant a lot to me and Shane and obviously other people in the area. And Shane, like you mentioned, he was a great player too. It wasn't just that he was this great kind of ambassador for the game and everything, but he was a great player. He graduated from Union in 1967, finished his basketball career with over 1,000 points, which was good for second place at the time. I believe he was like 27 points behind Don Neff. He was one of the early members of the Union Athletic Hall of Fame. Longtime member of the committee as well. You know, you would see him at games, even obviously through this winter before we lost him a couple months ago. He would be keeping stats. He would be on the front row of all Uniota games. You would see him at different tournament games as well for different teams. He was at, you know, he was able to make a greater impact after he played too, as a longtime coach at Uniota. He helped organize and run the biddy ball program up on the hill at Uniota for years. That thing was, I can't imagine a school in this area have had a better organized league than that was when Dale ran it. Along with his longtime friend Dave McMillan, who you can probably remember from, he wrote for the Gazette for a long time. He wrote for the Sports Page website in the early 2000s. Did an awesome job there. Him and Dave and Dale tracked and compiled stats across the SEC in every sport. He would ask me for different stats that I got from games that I went to because he was still compiling them. Up through this winter, you know, his programs that he organized were, you know, a must have for all local fans. It wasn't just Uniota fans because he had accurate information on Uniota. He had accurate information on the opponents and on the entire SVC as well. So, you know, it was, I believe, you know, I don't want to speak for you, Shane, but I believe he was a big influence on starting the website, right?
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah. 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 And part of this tournament was in memory for Dale and his legacy in the SVC community, because I wouldn't have done this sort of research. I wouldn't have started the Uniota basketball page that I started 8 years ago. I wouldn't have started it if I didn't have the information at hand that Dale had put out in programs and such from the past. So that's where a lot of it started. And then I got onto newspapers.com and I started to find different things here or there using Josh Jones's book. That's how this tournament started, was from the research I was doing because of things that from Dale. So that's where the namesake came from.
Well, I guess well said. Let's talk about the bracket here. You know, this is a bracket that had a little bit of older flavor in it in certain areas of the bracket that, again, I wasn't going to pretend to get on here and act like I know or to act like I have the eye test to tell you. The things that did jump out at me, I coached against several Huntington teams where early in Kello's career, they played a certain way. Later, they played a little differently. You know, the team that jumps out at me here is the Piketon 3 seed. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a team that's a champion and arguably the toughest league that our league's ever had. You know, and then here at the top seed is an example of what I'm talking about. You know, with the Uniota team, the 14-15 team, in my opinion, John, I don't know how you feel about it. You're a lot closer to it than I was. The best Uniota team during that run mm-hmm. here with Coach Hoops and so forth. I thought it was the most complete team. I thought it was the team that probably played some of the best competition when you consider the depth in the league. I know Paint Valley was a 16-9 team. They were a 12 seed in this bracket. I've argued that was the best Dylan Swingle team at Paint Valley was his freshman year in terms of what he had around him. So the depth here, but I think certainly it's hard to look at this bracket and not start there at the top seed. What in your opinion made that particular Uniota team the best out of so many really, really good teams here over that 5-6-7 year run of Coach Hoops in the Uniota program?
Well, I just think it was the depth to where they could play more up-tempo, more aggressive defensively, because they had waves of guys that could come off the bench. And, you know, for after that year, there was always the depth, but it wasn't as strong, if that makes sense, because and Alec Atkins came off the bench in the district final game for them. Who would have been a starter anywhere? He played starter minutes, but he had 17 points, 9 rebounds in the district championship game off the bench. And, you know, there was a kid who is probably an all-league player any other school. But because of his role, he steps in and, you know, plays a huge part for them. You know, I think – and the fact that – you know, you had a two-time SEC Player of the Year, Nick Corcoran, Nick Overly, who – between his sophomore and junior year, made a huge leap, and then even bigger one between his junior and senior year. I mean, how tall do you think Nick was? 5'8"? 5'9"?
Probably 5'8", 5'9", yeah.
Yeah. He had an easy dunk in a game that year. It was just how athletic they were. You know, they brought in, you know, Eric Hosley, who one of the better athletes we've had in this league, you know, across three sports for a long time. Cole Cottrell really turned things on that year. Kyle Strange, who was an all-league player as a sophomore, you know, still was a starter, but kind of had his role go down. But he was really good. Logan Swackhammer as a freshman, really good. Isaac Wheeler coming off the bench for them, just a big, strong body inside. Then if you look at it, they played Miami Trace in a game they ended up winning by I believe they won by 5. It was their closest game of the year until the regional semifinal. And in that game, they started off down like 12 points, and Coach Hoops just clears the bench, puts 5 new guys in, including Austin Hauser, who was just big football player as a junior, but he goes and he plays D2 football. Sawyer Lovely, who is, you know, comes in. Those two make huge plays in that game, and they weren't really rotation guys. Just showing how good the depth of that team was that Coach Hoops could go 9-10 players deep and not miss anything. So I think that's where they made a big difference. I just remember them playing a good Waverly team and putting up 90 points against them that year. Mm-hmm. You know, they could do it in so many different ways. They could beat you in a low scoring game, or they could do it in a more up tempo game. You know, they were just fantastic, and they didn't have a close game all year besides that Miami Trace game. Mm-hmm. You know, and going D2, going through to the regionals in D2 without having a game within 10 points is also incredibly impressive.
Yeah. Well said.
Well, is there anything, John, you'd like to throw back at Shane about this particular bracket?
Now, I was kind of looking at it. I was looking at it again here. Like, the depth of this one is insane, too, because, like, this is where the numbers to me, like, the number seeds don't really hold up, because, like, that 98-99 Southeastern team was unreal. Mm-hmm. You know, they're ahead in the regionals and lose the lead. Late, you know, to you know, a really good Grandview Heights team, and they're a 6 seed. So, what do you, besides that 91-92 Piketon team, who, like you mentioned, is coming from probably the best league we've ever had, is there anything else that stood out to you in this region?
Well, it was the incredible talent of some of those middle seeds. I'd mentioned the 92 Piketon team, obviously, to do what they did against the competition that they were facing. You remember, John, when we were talking about defending some of the other leagues, the 95 year came up, the 99 year came up. I mean, that 99 team, people talk about Netter, and he was incredible. You heard me mention on several shows how good Tyler Barbee was. I mean, he was a phenomenal player. So this is certainly got some middle depth, because that number 11 Westfall team, obviously very, very good.
Yes.
I mentioned the Paint Valley, that 12 seed's a dangerous 12 seed. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you look at great players, we always happen to think of, you know, their particular senior year or whatever. A lot of times what happens is throughout your career, you actually play on your best team maybe in another year because of some of the players who might have been around you. So
yeah,
I think you run into that here a little bit. But that particular Uniota team, if you went on the eye test or if you went on accomplishments especially, going to be very, very tough to beat. But there's certainly some teams in here that if you were to just to throw out the accomplishments, because again, it's going to be hard to accomplish what that team did going undefeated to the regional.
Right.
If you're willing to look at it from a basketball perspective, there's certainly going to be two or three teams talented enough, in my opinion, to at least sit down maybe later in the Elite Eight or the Final Four to talk a little basketball.
Yeah. Well, that Southeastern team, the two seed, the 77 team, and the Piketon team, I think either one would be a good matchup if you just looked at it actual basketball-wise. You know, and that's obviously doing the research with the 77 Southeastern team, but that 91-92 Piketon team was unreal as well.
Yes.
Up next, we'll visit the brink of a state title with our top seed while heading back to the days of Twin to name the bracket. And this section of the podcast brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff, located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. You can contact them by calling them at 740-773-7387. You can also look up all kinds of information on the web at northforkanimalclinic.com. And they do still have special procedures underway. Staff's communicating via phone and email and text and so forth. And we ask that you give them a call ahead of time if you have any questions, if you're going there with your pets and so on and so forth. So that's North Fork Animal Clinic. Appreciate their sponsorship here on the podcast. John, our next bracket is one you called the Ron Shoemaker bracket. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about Mr. Shoemaker?
Yeah, Ron Shoemaker is one of the greatest players in Ross County history. Predates the SVC by about 10 years and predates Paint Valley High School. Even he went to Twin High School in Bourneville, which obviously consolidated with Bainbridge into Paint Valley. He amassed 1,673 career points, stood as a Ross County record for 38 years, fourth highest ever. It was the Ross County record until Matt Combs. I think some of us might know him here, broke that record. He was an honorable mention All-Ohio member his junior and senior years. That was – when I looked at it, they named first and second team back then and then an honorable mention. So it was pretty much like a third team more or less then. He scored 547 points his senior year, had a game high of 38. Predates the three-point line, obviously. There's a chance that he would have scored more his senior year. Also, that another very important or impressive thing, his senior year, Twin went 16-0 in the regular season. So they only played 16 games then. Now you play 22. A lot of these guys played 20. Some played 18, but back then only 16 in the regular season. He played freshman ball at Ohio University, which, you know, you might think, oh, he only played freshman ball, but that was when freshmen didn't play varsity basketball. Like Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played freshman basketball at UCLA. So, you know, it still was really impressive to play freshman basketball in college. Then he focused on coaching. He was the head coach at Bishop Leger, went 54-12 in three seasons, winning 20 games his final year. Once again, it was before they played 20 games in the regular season. So, you know, he after his tenure as at Bishop Leger, he focused on administrative duties, where he's a principal at Waverly and then was superintendent at Paint Valley. He was the unanimous choice or induction into the Paint Valley Hall of Fame in 2005. If you're at a basketball game in the winter, you're going to see him at it. It doesn't have to be a Unioda game, which he's at Unioda games now because his grandson, Nick Easterday, is an assistant at Unioda. And that's why he's at all those games. But you'll also see him, him and his wife, Joy. You'll see at games. If you sit down and talk basketball with him, he's like, doesn't matter. He's still very sharp. He'll talk to me about different things that happened in my JV games that he'll notice that I'm like, yeah, you know, I picked up, like, it might be something I didn't even pick up on that I can use later on because he's so sharp into the game and everything. I thought it was important to kind of honor somebody that was before the SVC also, as an all-time great player. And I think that says a lot to be inducted into the Paint Valley Hall of Fame from Twin because of how important he was to that entire community as well.
Well, I don't think there's any question. I think it's always neat to study, obviously, someone in my situation to hear the Paint Valley history. It's kind of cool to kind of see how they, you know, they were kind of the big school on the block there for a while. Mm-hmm. When they consolidated over earlier than some of the others. It's kind of ironic to see how that, you know, all played right out then and how it does now. Let's just talk about the bracket then. Obviously, this is a team I know really, really well. Here at the top seed, the 90-91. Uniota team all the way up to the final game and unable to finish it off there, but nonetheless state runner up, just an incredible run. The year after Southeastern had been to the state, and then we mentioned what Pike goes on to be 92 and so forth. Just a time in the league where the league was really, really good. Some really good teams in that 91 league that made for some fun basketball to watch. It was a team that could spread the floor with the 3-point line, and they're a team that really came on defensively. And once the defense matched the offense, they really started to roll. I look down through this bracket as well, and it's so funny to see how many teams only lose 4 games, 3 games, 2 games, and you know their seeds forced to move on down. Again, accomplishments play a role, but again, if you watch the eye test, some really, really good basketball teams in this region. Again, this is a region where I don't pretend to get involved in a lot of the matchups of some of the teams that played back into the 70s. I was intrigued, though. That number 7 seed Huntington there is a good basketball team with one of the great guards in the history of our conference. Piketon's had some really good depth. The Paint Valley team in 92-93. Now, that was a unique situation where they lost a player later in the year. Mm-hmm. So, again, when you're going off of accomplishments – for a team that never watched them play, they see 13-1 SVC champion got beat in a sectional. It's one of those situations where, okay, that doesn't stack up maybe against like 40, 50 other teams here in this bracket. But again, at full strength, I can tell you against someone who competed against them at full strength, throw the accomplishment stuff out and just do the eye test.
Yeah.
And that basketball team, you know, throughout that entire season, a lot better than a 6 seed. You see what I'm saying? So it's one of those that, you know, I get it. So again, this Uniota team at 20-4, there, the number 11 seed, you get it, just the depth of these teams. I think what I would remind people, if your team is in this thing in the 64, that means you were good. I mean, you know, I mean, there's not, there aren't very many bad teams in this particular bracket game that John put together, which is a lot of fun. So to me, obviously, that Uniota team means a lot to me. Growing up watching my brother play on it, that was the year right before I came into high school, and a lot of guys I looked up to on that team. And I obviously, I might be biased, I think they'll be awfully tough to beat on their road to the Final Four in this thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought, you know, they were one of the top two seeds to me when I was putting this together. That was why they're on that other side of the bracket with the Southeastern 89-90. That was kind of the way I looked at it. But, yeah, they were – I mean, people – I had always heard – and this was – you know, I remember watching a good bit, but I don't think I deciphered it as much on – that your brother Matt was – he was just a scorer. He averaged, you know, 24 points a game, but 11 rebounds and almost 5 assists a game too.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, when Matt graduated, he might have been Uniota's all-time scorer, rebounder, and assist. I could be wrong on that. If I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure on that.
An underachiever, yeah, so in other words.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ignore the fact that he – held the SEC record for scoring, which is obviously unbelievable, and just pay attention to how good of an overall player he was. And then you got Jeff Miller, 14 points, almost 5 assists a game. Jason Tress, 10 points a game, but was injured and then came on and was unbelievable late in that tournament run. In their sectional game against St. Trace, they won, I believe it was either 49-46 or 47-44, and Matt Colmes had 36 points in the game, just to show how good he was. But then you go to the district, and you have, you know, Jason Tress hitting 4 threes in a 1-point win over South Webster, Jeff Miller hitting back-to-back threes to beat Shenandoah, Dan Cox 8-for-10 from the field to beat Shenandoah. You know, it's they were a very deep team. That's not even mentioned D.B. Mullins. 5 assists a game, helped run the show. Jim Hutchison come off the bench. Just a really good, talented team. And they're the only team in SBC history to get to the championship game. I think they're going to be really hard to beat. You mentioned that that 07-08 Huntington team with the Kello brothers. Mm-hmm. They were just phenomenal. Their depth was really good, and they're one of those teams that, you know, was beaten in a close matchup in this region in the first round, but that shows the depth of this region itself. The 99.
Josh had a, if I can interrupt you there, Josh had a kind of a unique career where his freshman year, some of those early teams he played with that had great size and so forth, mm-hmm. they were probably more complete, more talented teams than later on. But it's just so hard to ignore what he ended up becoming, because he was such a talented player as a young kid. He was so dynamic, and it was at a time where the game was really starting to change. At Josh Kello, Evan Legg, they were coming through in that time period where – you know, the point guard was no longer the floor general, so to speak, as much as the little league dynamics were starting to change, and it was starting to creep up into the high school game to the point where your point guards were a little bit more of your, you know, if you remember the higher levels of basketball, your Steve Nash time periods and so forth, like, hey, I'll not only distribute, I'm going to kind of keep it in my hands more, and I'll also score it, and I'll do all the different things. So he was so dynamic, and he was so difficult to handle. Obviously, with the ball in his hands, he didn't turn it over much. He made players around him better, and then he was clutch. Like there were certain situations down the stretch where he hit big shot after big shot. I know when they won the league their senior year, if I'm not mistaken, it was their junior year where they ran the table the second half of the, the league. I remember a shot he hit against Southeastern a game winner. Uh-huh. He was so dynamic that even though I think maybe their roster – was better when he was younger, it's hard to argue with the team accomplishments and what he ended up becoming individually, along with his brother there in the backcourt and so forth. Justin, just a really, really special player. Josh is one of the kids that with the ball in his hand could just really, really change the game. Really good player.
Yeah, I remember that game at Southeastern. You knew it was over when he had the ball. He was good. And really, it reminded me a little of the Michael Jordan shot in a way technically not end his career the second time. But that shot where he came off the you know, left wing, goes to the right wing, pulls up. You know, I don't think Josh threw his defender away, but he had such a dynamic dribble to the elbow and pull up that it was impossible to guard, because if he didn't pull up, he's going to blow by you. So you overplay it, and then he just stops on a dime, pulls up, knocks down his jump shot. He was unbelievable. You know, and he was one of the best players we've had in the last 20 years in the league. Was a standout for 4 years. And he played with Jeremiah Oates, Neil Depew, those gigantic, outstanding big men. And then, like you mentioned, his last 2 years, he was more –
they were a smaller team, but they probably became better defensively. They became more capable of playing man, which allowed them to play quicker, faster tempo, which put him in more space. So Josh and Justin with the ball in their hand became very difficult. So yeah, they had a lot of scrappy defenders. Certainly a good basketball team. Those teams, along with the late 80s Huntington teams that I mentioned earlier, are certainly probably the best Huntington teams I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, and then
as well as the 92 team.
Yes. You know, we have different teams in this also. And you mentioned Evan Legg, his senior year, you know, they were – that dude could play. Like, that's just flat out was – unbelievable. If you were a leg, you could play. Him and Scott had just phenomenal careers. Evan could do it all around. Mix in with, you know, Keenan Bruss was really good. Caleb Southworth, those two, they didn't even need to score. You know, they could, but they didn't need to. And they were two of the top three in the league in rebounding, or maybe it was top four in the league in rebounding when they were that 2011 year. Or no, it would have been the team that went to state. So it kind of scratched that. And I'll talk about that in the next region.
Well, that's why I didn't talk as much about Evan here. I'll talk more about Evan later. But Evan was that same type of kid we're talking about here. Just a real, real special point guard that just completely changed the game when the ball was in his hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you throw in the you know, with Zach Farmer and Craig and Moore, Isaac Brapson playing with those guys in 2011. But then you also have that team in 2013 with those three, the other Farmer, Jeremy Farmer, Jared Volgamore, those guys were really good in 2013 as well. You know, I think Unioda 90-91 is the best team in this region. That's why they're the one seed. But also, you know, there's going to be some tough matchups, you know, with them to get to that Final Four. I think they should get there, and I do think they will.
Anything you want to pick Shane's brain on about this bracket before we move on?
Yeah. Can you just, you know, they lost in the first round. You know, I didn't necessarily agree with it, with that 92-93 Paint Valley team. Can you talk just a little bit more about them, Shane, just to kind of, educate more people?
Well, I think, again, what happened was a little bit in terms of accomplishments, the seeding was a little misleading. The, you know, if you look back to what they accomplished in the 92 season, it was basically the same team. Craig and Craig Kearns, 93 player of the year, was even a sophomore. He played on a really, really good 91. The Paint Valley team in 91 was really, really good. So Craig had an outstanding career. They went 6-5 across the board. Arguably the most underrated point guard in the last 30 years of the SVC's, Josh Anderson. Josh was terrific. He had about 6-5, could see over the top, could push the ball in transition. Derek Newland was an athletic big. Shane Cauley was big. Jason Johnson was an athletic defender. And again, all of them went right around that 6'4", 6'5", 6'6" maybe. And they were really, really talented. We talked about them on previous shows. They kind of almost – they were so dominant by the end of 92 and into the summer leading into 93 that the league, I don't want to say, you know, gave way to them, but – throughout the regular season, I think a lot of schools knew that they would be tough to beat. I was on the team that was fortunate enough to knock them off. And the sectional, one of the biggest SVC upsets in probably the history of our league. But obviously I'm proud of that. But if I'm going to sit here and talk basketball analysis, I also have to recognize that they lost a huge piece of the puzzle in Colley late in that year. So it was a little bit of a different team. It was even a team that came in down Newland and Colley and beat our Uniota team by like 30 some points on senior night. So it was a situation where it was a unique game plan. It was a unique game. We were fortunate enough to win the game. It was one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of. And again, I'm proud of it, but yeah, to talk about them in terms of the eye test, I know they fall to six seed again because of the accomplishments and the different things, but certainly a really, really good team. The point guard play in this bracket with Josh Anderson and then Evan Legg, Josh Kelly, it's really fun to go through and see the different types of point guards. And I know I'm probably missing some throughout this whole thing. It's just kind of neat to see. And the other thing I'll throw in there is this. Post play was still a factor in the SVC in a lot of different areas. And what's misleading in today's game, guys, is that we don't throw the ball in the post anymore because it's a loss. We don't throw it in there anymore because not as many people are good. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think when you had Dylan Swingle, you'd still throw it in there. If you had Tyler Schleich, you'd still throw it in there. If you had Kevin Netter, you'd still throw it in there. It's one of those things where, you know, if you're a post player growing up and you still work on your craft, yes, in today's game, you need to be able to handle it. You need to be able to step out and shoot a little bit. There's still something to be said playing to your back to the basket and being that dominant guy that teams are confident to throw in there and play off of you because, you know, they didn't stop throwing it in the post in the NBA a lot of times because they don't want to play inside anymore. They stopped throwing it in because no one's as good. Like, mm-hmm. You know, the Rockets don't throw it in there because when they had Clint Capella, it wasn't any good. So I'm saying right. If they still had Akeem Olajuwon, one, they'd probably throw it in there still. You know, so it's one of those things where there's still some really, really dominant post players. And it's fun to look back on this time and think about how the point guards and some of those guys mixed it, that inside out, and utilized the three-point shot and so forth. So fun bracket it was. But you're right, the Paint Valley team, really, really good team. Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, we'll move on to our final bracket. We honor a ZT all-time great. Well, we will see if Piketon Final Four team has enough to stay chalk throughout the bracket. And our final segment going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. You can look them up on the web, or you can give them a call at 740-986-4653. They are open. We know this because Shane has gone out there and investigated on his own just to check out the golf course, Shane, and you can confirm it's open, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Outstanding condition. Nice precautions in place. Everything's really, really good.
All right. We appreciate their help on the podcast here. So, gentlemen, we move into the fourth and final bracket here. John, you want to unveil here the name of the bracket and talk a little bit about the namesake?
Yeah, this is the Jeff Reisinger Regional, named after one of the greatest players to ever come out of Ross County and all of Southeast Ohio. 1970 graduate of St. Trace. Like I mentioned earlier, St. Trace came into the SVC in 70-71, at least in basketball. He led the Pioneers to back-to-back 26-1 records his junior and senior year. 52-2 in those 2 years. As a junior, he was first team All Ohio, averaged 22.5 points a game. Then as a senior, he was Class A State Player of the Year, averaged 23 points, 18 rebounds a game, led the Pioneers to their only Final Four. In his career, he finished with 1,646 career points, gathered 1,261 rebounds, which is actually fifth all-time in the state of Ohio. He's obviously a member of the St. Trace Athletic Hall of Fame. After high school, he went to junior college for 2 years, became a JUCO All-American. He was one of the most sought-out junior college players in the country. Clemson is where he ended up. He was a two-year starter. He was a captain as a senior in 73-74. In his career, he averaged 10.5 points and 5.8 rebounds a game. He also played with a guy who played in the NBA for roughly 700 years in Tree Rollins. So he went from playing, you know, like the five really in high school to being a good four, you know, throughout the years. Also, I was able to go to one of his camps, the Christian basketball camps that he runs for children. I know 2 years ago he still ran one. You know, that was the most recent one that I could find. I think he still runs them pretty often in the Chillicothe area. You know, one of the just elite players of all time. They would have definitely been a one seed, their 69-70 team. They finished number one in the state and lost to Sebring McKinley in the state semifinal. Yeah, just great, great player, and really important to basketball in Southeast Ohio.
No question. Yeah, that's well said. Well, we dive right into the bracket. Again, we've been starting with the top seeds, this 08-09. Piketon team had great depth. The scoring duo there of Cody Smith, Jordan Brapson, as long as the I've mentioned the point guard play of Evan Legg as a sophomore, just tremendous. They were long, they were athletic. As I look down through this bracket, the Uniota Southeastern programs throughout history, I think their depth shows up a lot in this bracket. That's something that kind of caught my attention. You know, Zane Trace is you know, with you mentioning him there, Zane Trace, obviously really, really good team here that is down on the other end of the bracket. And there's some teams throughout Zane Trace that for some reason, man, they get lost in the shuffle in this. You know, you mentioned earlier the Gold Ball team.
Yeah.
You know, the Chris Beard team was so good in this bracket. I know with Gray McCullough, who was really a nice young player on some of those teams. By the time you got to 97, He had become really, really elite. Some really good players. I again, this Piketon team was fun to watch. The tempo they played at, they got up and down, and it was certainly a team I remember covering quite well. And then obviously this Zane Trace team we've covered along the way, and then obviously a lot of the Uniota teams I'm familiar with in Southeastern. You know, throughout the different times. Again, it's been interesting for me to study some of their 70s and 80s and then playing against some of the 90s and coaching some of the 90s, 2000s. It's incredible the depth that those two schools have had in basketball throughout the history of our conference. So this has been a lot of fun. I guess we'll start here in this bracket. Talk to us about Piketon had the long run. This 08-09 team certainly kind of the certainly the most accomplished, but probably the most complete team out of the entire run. Just talk to us a little bit about them.
Well, yeah. if just looking back at the stats was really fun, and then going back, this is one of the. I think this was the first year of the website, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sprint 07 maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. When was it?
Yeah.
When did it start? SVC Sports Talk.
Oh dear!
What I think that was 2010, 2011, because that's when I moved back home and I was listening to it a lot. But yeah, it was that 08, 09 team. It was a
fall of 08, evidently.
Okay. Yeah. So that league was really good. You know, they split the league with Westfall, who was. Had their top six players were seniors. They were ridiculous. And they actually beat Westfall three times that year, including in the district championship game. Mm-hmm. Cody Smith, you know, averaged 19 points a game, shot 55% from the field, was player of the year. Jordan Brapson averaged almost 19 points a game.
Good player.
Yeah. You know, Evan Legg ran the show, was he still wasn't the prototypical point guard because he scored almost 13 points a game and could just go off. But he you know, distributed a little bit more then, but was extremely explosive. Keenan Brush, Caleb Southworth, awesome interior players. Jared Volgamore made huge plays for them in that regional final game. The Heltons, Kenny and Jamie, were key contributors off the bench too. You know, Brapson and Smith, and their four wins at the Convo combined for over 47 points a game between the two. Brabson averaged almost 25 points a game. They combined for 53 points in the regional championship game. You know, it was one of the best leagues we've had since the turn of the century, and they were the best team out of it. I know they tied for the league, but that was a league that had Adina, had Clay Roll, Buddy Brabson were really good. I believe finished third that year. They were, you know, a really tough team. I know that was our year. We won the one game that year, and I don't even think we were that bad. Like, we were bad, but we weren't that bad in comparison to other years, because Zane Trace made it to the district finals that year also, and lost in overtime to a North Adams team that was really, really good, that Piketon knocked off in the regional. So, I mean, that league was very deep, really good. And then, of course, their second round matchup is Shane, your senior year. That's one of those, the 94-95 Uniota team. Don't even look at the number in front of them, because 20-3 got to the district final. Jason Cruz, Mike Fowle, obviously Shane Combs, Matt Hoops, Matt Park, Chad Ward, just a loaded team, a bunch of guys that could score 15 plus anytime. Cruz's outlet passes to Fowle, were pretty much automatic baskets. They hit 15 threes in a, or 13 threes in a district semifinal win over North Adams that they were losing by. Were you guys down 10 at the half, and you guys won by 19?
Yeah. I think we scored almost 60 points in the second half.
So, that's a team that could just, light you up. In a variety of different ways. You could go down inside to Cruz, or Cruz could step out, whatever. I mean, that dude was unreal. So, I mean, that's probably not a fair 1-8 matchup. That's going to be a really tough matchup for them, because, I mean, really, if you saw both teams.
I want to be fair. I think obviously what happens is the Piketon Final Four run. Again, mm-hmm. We're doing an accomplishment thing here. Our league accomplishments are very comparable. We won an outright league in a league that, when you want to start talking about star power in terms of guys like Chris Beard and you had Zane Trace team. We talked about the depth of that Southeastern team, Tony Picklesheimer there at West Falls, right. So on down the line. But I guess the biggest thing about this game is one thing we haven't talked about today is the different errors, in terms of how the game was played a lot differently. We were a man-to-man team. It would be interesting for us to play in a time where, it's a little bit more physical, put our hands on a little bit. We were undersized defensively at the four position. Piketon had nice size. We had a lot of nice depth in terms of on-ball defenders. So I think we were both teams that would like to play in the full court. So, no, it is. I understand the 8 seed, because I'm not going to sit here and just because it's my team and say we should have been a 4, 5, 6, because again, I go back to what I said at the beginning. Once you get to about the 3 line and you go all the way up to about the 14 line, throw them in a hat and draw them out. Yeah. It's just, it is what it is. I just think that's what makes it fun. I will say, on behalf of like one of my best friends growing up, the one thing that would give you a lot of confidence going into a game is, even in a bracket as special as this, there aren't very many games on this bracket we wouldn't enter with the best player on the court.
Right.
Jason was that special a player. And then how many teams on this bracket, it's number two player scored, 1,375 points, in their career. So it is. It's a special thing. Even the depth, you mentioned Chad Ward earlier and so forth, and what he would give our team. My senior year, we finally matured a lot from our junior year up and became a good team. But man, I'm not doubting the talent of that Piketon team for sure. They were outstanding.
Yeah, if you just look at those two teams, you had the Smith and Brabson each averaged around 19 points a game. Well, Cruz and Fowle, Cruz averaged 21 and Fout averaged 20. So, I mean, that's your top two matchups are really good in that. It'd be really fun to be able to watch that. Now, this bracket is, I looked at the Southeastern teams in this bracket. Oh, my goodness, they're good. John Denicki's numbers his senior year were hilarious, which leads into which was the 97-98 team, which is the seventh seed in this bracket, which leads into, you know, they played mostly juniors and Denicki, and then Denicki graduates, and then, oh, Kevin Etter moves in the 98-99 team, and they just, you know, didn't drop off in any way. Then you have the 01-02 and 02-03 Southeastern teams, Chris Skaggs, Tristan Deddy, and those teams. The 01-02 year that Brian Netter had as their point guard was unreal. I mean, like, I remember how good he was because I grew up playing against him, mostly playing with him in Little League baseball, but he averaged 8 points, 8 assists, 4 steals a game. His assists and steals led the league. So I think that's the big difference between their 01-02 and 02-03 team was the point guard play there. And then you have the 15-16 Uniota team who, you know, they have – they're the Cole Cottrell injury away from maybe being better than they were the year before. You know, with Swack, Cameron, Kennedy being just unreal sophomores, I'd still probably give the 14-15 team a nod over them. But, you know, if Cole Cottrell doesn't get injured, you know, they're going undefeated. Like, honestly, they won 21 games. They went 21-1 anyway, lost by 3 to Chillicothe, a Chillicothe team who they beat in the district or the sectional. They weren't losing that next year either. So, I mean, that just, to me, shows the depth of this bracket in general. And really, I think Piketon's probably the favorite. But at the same time, out of the 8 teams left in this one, I wouldn't be surprised if any of the eight teams came out. This is, to me, this is probably the most loaded rest of the bracket left out of the individual brackets.
Yeah, so just talking about this time period of when he played and trying to coach against him, obviously Chris Skaggs had incredible size, but he also had great touch. He had good conditioning. You know, you would think, though, they're going to slow it down and throw it into him. That wasn't the case at all. His teams played with great tempo. He played with great athletes, and he made trips, and they were able to play around him and so forth. And what would happen is you try to throw everything. You throw the kitchen sink at him. Well, okay, you might hold him to 18. Well, then he had 4 teammates get 14, okay, now we're going to turn and we're going to take 2 or 3 guys away on the perimeter. But now you start playing him one-on-one. He was liable to have games of like where he'd shoot 12 or 15 from the floor and score 30 some, you know, because he was a good free throw shooter too. So, you know, when I think back through some of those post players of your Tyler Schleich and, you know, JB Edwards and some of those different guys that I coach against in those time periods, Chris was certainly unique just in the standpoint of his size and how he completely changed the game just by being out there.
Yeah. His senior year in the district championship game, he went 16 of 20 from the field and finished 34 points.
Yeah, that seemed common when you coached against him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else in this bracket that you want Shane to kind of respond to, John?
I mean, really, I was going to talk about Chris Skaggs.
Okay.
You pretty much covered it. I mean, his junior year with the Netter, Tristan Deddy averaging like 17 points a game. Here's something, Shane. I don't know. You know, I would have to go through game by game on these, but they won by an average of 27 points a game that year.
Jeez.
Like, that's unreal. I've never heard of like a more dominant. I don't know how good the league was like in comparison. I mean, obviously I was a junior in it and, you know, thinking back, but
what was the year there again?
01-02.
Yeah. I was thinking that what had happened there in that league, again, very similar to that 92-95 jump. What happened there early in Chris's
you're testing my knowledge here without notes in front of me. What happened in Chris's early years was Zane Trace won the gold ball. Is that correct? Am I in the right time period there?
His sophomore year, yeah.
And so they win the gold ball. They come back. That's right. That's right. By the end of that, they were coming. Well, that was a time period at that point where you know, there was good teams. Paint Valley was actually very good there that year too. And you'll remember the nightmare at the preview. You know, the Paint Valley teams during that time lost Chris Young, lost Drew Bob, lost some different guys. So, you know, that was a top. Zane Trace was still good. Paint Valley was a top four team. But yeah, the bottom half of the league there wasn't great. But again, what would happen with Southeastern is the reason they would blow teams out is you would be around that 10, 11, 12, and you'd have to start to make a decision. Okay, well, are we going to still try to do tempo? As soon as you started to try to go with them, again, what shocked you about that team was how fast they could still play. And they were explosive, man. They could score. They could score in no time. The Deddy kid was a special player. I mean, he's probably as underappreciated as, you know, if you're going to do a top 10 most underappreciated, just his ability to flat score it, you know, because, again, of the numbers Chris ended up putting up.
Yeah, and that on my last game against them, we were down by two with the ball with just over 2 minutes left. And they finished the game, I think, on an 18-2 run. And
yeah, that's who they were. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not, I can't remember so much if we fouled that much. They just, you know, we took a quick shot, they went down and scored. We take a quick shot, they go down and score. Because you had to play a certain style against them because they could play fast or slow. So you had to really go all out into whatever style you're going to play against them. And one last thing I want to throw out is Dan Easterday, as a coach, his first 2 years, they went 40-9 in 97-98, 98-99. His two teams are still in it.
Good team. They were really talented teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Just really talented teams. That was the most fun thing about this to me was being able to see how good some of these teams were. And it's spending all this time on this was really enjoyable for me.
It must have been a labor of love, John, because it sounds like you really, really got down in the weeds for this, and that's the fun stuff about this when you can go back and look at that, and you know, you've learned so much through this. I'm sure you'll be up there with some of the names of the people that you've talked about earlier, as far as knowledge of SVC. You're going to be pushing Shane here out of the seat pretty soon if you keep going. So,
well,
that's great.
I don't know about that, but it's been fun.
Just let me know.
Well, if you want to talk this over further, you may contact these gentlemen. You may do so at via email. You can email Shane at admin1@svcsportzone.com. On Twitter, he's available with the handle svcsportzone. On Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs SVC Sportzone and svcsportzone.com. John, you can email him at jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And, of course, he already gave his Twitter handle earlier in the program. But for those that don't have it memorized, it's @CoconutWallPapa. They both use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk when they're doing this kind of stuff. They're doing the tweeting on about this kind of thing. And you can also leave us a message at DBK Media Services, 740-569-3254. As always, we request you share our information on Facebook and retweet it on Twitter. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, how about giving us a good rating and maybe a favorable review as well? We'd love to hear from you. Gentlemen, final thoughts as we wrap this one up. It's been a long, involved one, but what do you want to leave the listeners with this week? John, we'll go to you first.
Well, I've done about 60 hours of research on this. And if you look for next month, we'll have done about 60 more hours on the next bracket that I'll be doing, which is the greatest girls team in SVC history.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing it anyway, and then the feedback Derek's gotten has made it to where I'm definitely going to be doing it, especially with not – I mean, we're not having summer basketball until at least July, so I got time. So That'll be coming soon. I don't know if we'll have any more episodes left by that time, but look for my Twitter and hashtag SEC Sports Talk and everything, and on SOSA for information on that when it's coming. I've came to the conclusion of I didn't do this one the smartest way, so I'm doing my research before I decide to do the tournament.
I see.
Like the last time I did, like, oh man, this would be kind of fun. So I started finding teams, and then I went, oh crap, I got to put as much research out here as I can on this. So I'm getting that together now. And then coming in the fall, will be a football, and then we'll see from there.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Shane, what about you?
Well, it's very interesting. And that's the first thing I wanted to say was just, again, John, just an unreal. I understand better than anything the amount of hours that go into things like this. And like I always say, what we're really trying to accomplish is you're trying to generate a ton of talk throughout the different age groups, highlight the history of our league so that people learn to celebrate it a little bit and so forth. And you start to learn so much about each school, each program, and so forth. So just, you know, job well done, and I look forward to continuing to just participate and try to use different platforms to try to help you promote it the best we can. So that's just awesome. As far as this, we certainly didn't want to leave the seniors out. What I wanted to do, just on behalf of John, myself, and you, Bruce, is just to say to the entire senior class is starting to go through some different versions of graduations. Congratulations. I know it's been a weird spring. It's one that, you know, your senior class will always be remembered for sure. And you know, when you think of accomplishments, you think of different things. I think of like our baseball league, John. There's so many different teams that had been building to this year. I could think of 3-4 schools right off the top of my head in our league that thought this had potential to be one of those really unique years in school history. And that's something that you know, it's unfortunate, but at the same time, it is what it is. And it's one of those things that as you start to look back through, you understand how hard winning is. You understand how nothing's for granted and so forth. So again, just congratulations to the seniors. I'm glad that a lot of schools are figuring out a way to honor those. And as far as the website, I know it's a downtime. Not a lot of, you know, when we weren't able to cover things in the spring, but we're going to continue to keep grinding through this, and we're going to continue to put our SVC Sports Talk out there and try to use some of these fun things and highlight things that John is doing, highlight things there on SOSA, and we'll continue to try to do some things here on the website as well. So, Bruce, appreciate you hanging in there with us this week, allowing us to talk about those four brackets, and we'll continue to cover the SVC, and hopefully we'll be back at it before you know it. So until then, continue to check out the website, and you can find that link on Derek Webb's page to get to SOSA to cover all of John's stuff. I'll continue to retweet it on our Twitter as well and continue to highlight it, you know, as we continue to put our SVC Sports Talks out there. So make sure you're checking out SVCSportsZone.com. We'll try our best to keep it 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.